Welcome to the fall, y'all. This is the AIMP Nashville Pubcast. I'm your host, Tim Hunzi. You're not going to want to snooze on this episode as we hit the basics of music publishing deals with legal expert Rachel Gutman of Taylor Gutman PLLC. Hey, hey, welcome back to AIMP Nashville Pubcast listeners. We have a great episode lined up for you today as we ease into the back end of our season. I'm sitting with my friend Rachel Gutman, who's with Taylor Gutman Attorneys, and we are just going to unpack a lot of fun stuff for you guys and fill in about publishing deals, talk about development. I think you're going to really love this episode. So, Rachel, thanks for joining our show today.
Thank you for having me, Tim. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today and to talk about publishing deals and the fun of developing creative people throughout their careers.
It's going to be a blast. But let's just start with a pretty easy question to get you all warmed up. How did you become interested in entertainment law and specifically publishing?
Well, we're going to take you back, and hopefully this won't take you for too far back, but I actually started my life in music at the age of 3 when I began playing the violin. And I was drawn to the violin from a very young age. I actually saw a family friend play when I was very young. I lived in Washington, D.C., and I fell in love with music through that. And throughout my childhood, I played in different orchestras at my schools and participated in different sorts of community and state. I was in North Carolina, youth orchestras and youth groups. But I realized that while I enjoy music, while it moves my soul, I was not really a performer. And where my talents and skills fell was in reading, writing, and helping people understand information. And when I was a teenager and went to tour colleges, this was in 2004, I don't mind aging myself, it was a time when the NYU Clive Davis School had just opened up. And I was touring NYU with my family, and they mentioned that school. And I promise all of you, if Katy Perry's song Firework had existed in that moment, it would have been the biggest sink of all time, because there would have been fireworks just blasting off over my head. It was the click moment I needed. And it helped me realize that I needed to work with creative people in music in a different way from being a musician myself. And so I researched a number of colleges. I wanted a very diverse experience, and I ended up choosing Middle Tennessee State University, which is where I attended for undergrad. And during that experience, I met a number of amazing people, including my now law partner, Stephanie Taylor. She was one of my undergraduate professors. In my coursework, I fell in love with copyright law, and I basically decided from there to go to law school. I ended up going to Tulane Law School in New Orleans, graduated in 2012, and it was a tough economic time, so I did some entertainment and some litigation work. I tried cases for big corporations for a few years, and then finally in 2018, I said, no, I want to do music full-time. I want to work with creative people all the time. And so I called Stephanie Taylor and I said, hey, I know you. You've been my friend and mentor for a good chunk of my adult life now, pretty much all of it. Do you know anyone in Nashville who's hiring? I want to move back with my husband and my dogs and do this full time. And she hired me over the phone 9 years after I graduated from Middle Tennessee State University. And the relationships I formed when I was 18 carried me into now my mid-30s. Where I'm now a law partner with her, a full law partner. And so it's a testament to the importance of relationships in this industry. It's also a testament to the importance of understanding that this is a long journey with a lot of ups and downs. And originally, I thought I was just going to be a paper person, you know, a document reviewer. But when I came back to Nashville in 2018, I started meeting songwriters. And I started realizing that I could hear things. And I thought it was weird, but I said, let's set up some rights and just have some fun and see what happens. And that's when the black hole of me being a fake publisher began. And so now, in addition to doing, of course, publishing deals, which I love supporting songwriters and learning about their craft, it's also helping them develop themselves as creatives, helping them find the right people to write with, whether it's artists, producers, co-writers, helping them find publishers who share their values and their work ethic and their mindsets, and then helping them think through not only that first deal, but what it'll look like in 40 years. And so I love to trigger people's brains to think about their long-term legal rights and how those first deals impact them for the rest of their life and beyond.
That's awesome. Yeah, there's a lot we're going to start to unpack here. But since you put a perfect segue into talking about deals, and let's do this. I like to pretend I am a fresh, brand new writer in town, even though I have 30 years experience. I'm going to put that all in the garbage for now. And I'm going to come to you as one of your new writers. Just pretend I can write great songs. I cannot. That's why I'm a publisher. But we'll take it from that aspect. And I say we're having our meeting and I'm sitting with you. And if you can give me the most basic of points that you walk through to educate a young writer that really doesn't have a full understanding of publishing, what are the main points you bring to the table to say, here's what you need to start thinking about?
Of course. The first thing I talk to people about is essentially the core of what a publishing deal is. So let's just talk about the core of that first. A publishing deal is a deal where you transfer all or part of your legal rights in your musical compositions to a company. So they will collect your royalties, set you up on rights, and help you build the career and monetize it. Now, when you do a publishing deal, you have to be thinking through, you know, what you're really looking for from that publisher. So when you're signing away your rights, there has to be a benefit for that bargain or an incentive for that bargain. And so the first thing I always tell people to think through is, well, how much of your rights do you want to sign away? And how much money do you need in exchange for those legal rights? I know a lot of Nashville deals on a first deal will ask for all of your publishing rights in exchange for what is called an advance, a sum of money to kind of keep you afloat while you're writing songs. And that sum of money depends on the company and on the deal and on the leverage you have. But that's usually the first core question I have for people I talk to is, what do you value? What is important to you? Is it keeping your legal rights, keeping some copyright interest in co-publishing, or is it getting some money in your pocket so that you don't live in a roach-infested former motel or in your car? Which I've seen some horrific living situations. It's why I've had 4 of my clients live with me over the years, me and my husband, is because I will not allow people to live in their car or on the street if I'm aware of it. I have a very serious problem with that as a human. And so that's really my core question, first and foremost, that I walk people through is, what do you value? Because it's usually a trade-off on a first publishing deal as to whether it's going to be that you're going to retain more co-publishing rights or whether you're going to need a bigger advance so that you can get a safe place to live and be at peace. I'm not saying be rich. I'm not telling you to go buy, you know, a fancy car. I just want people to be safe and healthy. So that's kind of the basic thing number one.
Publishers always get nervous around $100,000 mark. I call it, anytime I look at a writer, I go, am I willing to spend $100,000 on this person before I see any return on income? That's right when you start getting nervous. And so how quickly are you going to get to that? It can be 150, but once you start getting up into that much of a debt recoupment based level, that's when publishers get nervous. Okay. So that was my publisher hat, just to add a little insight in there, but I'm going to throw it back to you on point number two, which I'm guessing we're going to talk about term.
That's exactly where I was going to go next. And please, Tim, no, I love the perspective and experience because there are so many different sides to thinking through this. And I agree, actually, I've had a number of publishers say to me and my clients that $100,000 mark is the nervous point. It's not just you. It's pretty much everyone. So I'm going to just make a general blanket comment for listeners that is not a unique Tim thing. That is a across the board thing that I have been told for many, many years on many, many deals. But the next thing I always walk through immediately is the term. Tim hit the nail on the head there. And I tend to agree. We do have to have some time to really develop the career. If you're a brand new writer, you haven't had any big cuts, a major label cut, a big viral hit that turns into a major label cut, you usually need, I would say, easily 5 to 7 years. Now, let me also say, though, too, we have to think about what's been worked on, too, before the term of the deal. So, for example, if I have a writer who's been in Nashville writing for 3 years before getting a pub deal, and then we get that first pub deal, we're always hoping that the return will come in sooner. We can never guarantee that, but we're always hoping. But I do want to say one thing about the term of these deals generally, because there is a key difference. And before I dive in, I do a lot of publishing deals, not just in Nashville, but I also do publishing deals in New York, Los Angeles, the UK, pretty much around the world. In 2022, I actually did 30 publishing deals around the world. And I mention that because there are certain things about the terms of publishing deals, the time period for them, that are different from Nashville as compared with what I call an LA or pop publishing deal a lot of the time. The Nashville publishing deals provide what I call a lot of certainty in the term. It's usually, 18 to 24 months in the initial period with a few one-year options. And they have nice boundaries on what those term and contract periods are. But when you do a pop deal or an LA deal, and we can call those interchangeably, I've seen them for other genres as well. Sometimes these companies will ask you to agree to stay in the deal for at least three, for the later of 3 years, or a recoupment or repayment of the unrecouped balance. And when I see situations like that, the thing that makes me nervous about those is that people can be in deals for the rest of their lives if they don't recoup or repay the unrecouped balance of the advances that are paid to them. And as somebody who always wants to help my clients find new opportunities and grow, and maybe sometimes a company's no longer a fit because some employees moved on or ownership changed or so on and so forth, I always have to think about ways to help my clients have the flexibility to move on and grow when needed. And so that's just one thing I want to mention about the term, is that from a Nashville perspective, our terms of deals are much more concrete generally than what I see on deals outside of Nashville. And so I just want to share that conceptually with everyone on this podcast to help everyone understand that these deals can look different from different markets. And as Nashville builds more in the pop market, which is something I'm a big part of, and I know that, I want to be aware of the differences and be thoughtful about how we work through those differences to build careers in these different cities together.
What I've noticed is that the recoupment-based deals is what I call them, the pop deals, so to speak, are starting to come in. But I will add that I see those generally more when you're either an artist and it might be tied to a label term, which is more cycle-based. We can talk about that if you want to touch on that. But or they're larger draws. If you're coming in and say, this is usually more of a writer that has some success and they are asking for a rather large sum of money, then we would typically will go to a recoupment-based level deal, which is a little bit better of a bet for you if you have success and you're, a Jesse Frazier, a Gourley, and you're not necessarily selling a catalog, but you're able to come in and command a certain amount of money, and then we're going to put you into a recoupment-based deal. Are you seeing that in town as well?
Yes, I am seeing a good number of recoupment-based deals in town, more on my pop side of things still, not as much on the country side. I will say I do see a lot of terms where we convert the term if it's a writer-artist and the artist gets a major label record deal. We do convert the term of the publishing deal to be coterminous with the record deal. I do that quite a bit with a lot of publishers. But another thing I do on these recoupment deals, if I have to do them with a new writer who's developing because I worry about getting stuck in a deal for the rest of your life, is I try to put a cap on the contract periods. So I'll say, for example, 3 years or the later of 3 years of recoupment or repayment, but no later than 5 years. for example. That's one of the things I do so I can sleep at night and put my clients in deals, because otherwise I get very nervous. And it's because truly my husband, we've been together for over 15 years now. My husband is a recording and mix engineer and a songwriter himself. And I just think to myself, every time I get these deals in, this is someone's spouse, partner, child, brother, sister, parent. And I am not going to do a deal for them, without showing them what this really looks like and giving them the kind of advice and guidance and thought process that I would give to my own husband. And so when I do these deals, they come from a very deep personal place of wanting to take care of these people and wanting them to understand their assets and their rights and what's going on around them so that they have tools in their toolbox to handle their career for the rest of their lives.
Okay, great so far. So we've got money and publishing covered, whether your rights, as you called it, whether you're doing co-pub or full pub. We didn't really get into detail, but I think people understand that enough in my listening audience of what we're talking about. But what's another point that you find it's important to discuss with up and coming and writers?
Well, what's an interesting point that I want to address here are royalty rates, because you would normally think that royalty rates would match the ownership and co-publishing splits of the songs. But a lot of deals that I see, and I want to be very clear about this, it's not always out of Nashville, but sometimes it is. And I've seen these more out of LA and the UK in the last couple of years. What they will do is they will give you, 50-50 co-publishing, which means, if you're thinking about, publishing rights, you have all of your writer share and half of your publisher share. So that's 75% of the pie if we're on a 100% model, how ASCAP does the calculations of royalties. But sometimes what happens is, even when I can get those co-publishing rights and have that co-ownership and all those rights, I still have to take a lower royalty rate to allow the publisher to make some profit and to make some money back. But it's important to also understand from a royalty perspective that I said earlier, everything in a publishing deal is recoupable. And so it's important to understand that your royalty share is what your advance is being recouped against. So let's say we're doing what I call a traditional Nashville publishing deal, where the publisher owns all of your publishing rights and you continue to have your rights and your writer royalties. Essentially, it splits the pie 50-50. In that situation, let's say a dollar comes in the door. I'm keeping this very simple for purposes of this discussion. That dollar, 50 cents of that dollar would go towards the writer royalty share, which would automatically be applied towards recoupment. And the other 50 cents would go straight into the publisher's pocket, essentially to incentivize them to continue to develop and work with this writer. And so when you're thinking about how the money flows and how the money goes through, you have to think that you are recouping against your share of royalties. And so I want to just make sure that is said. It's not that every dollar in 100% of the dollar goes to recoup. It's that your portion of that dollar goes towards your recoupment share until you recoup. And I think that's something that should be said here to help everyone understand that the way the money flows may not be what you expect immediately.
I like it. Is there any other super basic points that are important for them to begin thinking about early in their careers?
There's one thing I want to mention here, only because if I tell everyone now, it might save a lot of headaches for publishers and attorneys down the road. And I love doing that for people. And that is a list of your compositions and your getting your catalog together in something called a Schedule A. Now, to be clear, it might be titled something different on your deal one day. It could be listed as Exhibit 1 or Schedule B. But here's what it is in general. It's a list of the compositions you've written. And I want to be very clear about this. This is something that you can do today, that you should start doing today. In fact, you should have started this the day you started writing songs. But really, we need to have data. As an industry, we need to have data about the songs you're writing so that we can know and understand the scope and protection available for your legal rights. And the way we do that is through a list of data or information about your songs, about your compositions. And so we need things like, I'm just going to list out a few general things. We need things like the song title. We need information such as who are the names of all of your co-writers on the song. We need information such as what percentage of the song does each co-writer own or have control over. We need to know things such as how do we get in touch with these co-writers if we need to get rights from them to license, you know, different things. We need to know if those co-writers are self-published or if they're in a publishing deal. So we know if we have to go through the publisher, because something I haven't touched on, it's a little more nuanced, but I want to discuss it here, is that when you sign a publishing deal, your publisher has the exclusive right to administer, and I'm going to explain what that means, but to administer your copyrights. And administration is essentially a right of control. It means it's the right on a most basic level to issue licenses and collect money. Just to break it down at a most basic level, to do basic agreements and to collect money for you based on your songwriting. And so we need to have this Schedule A information. It is so important to us because if we don't have this data, we cannot properly administer. We cannot properly issue licenses for your percentages of ownership. We cannot properly issue, enter in data to your PROs to collect the money properly. So the number one thing you can be doing today is every time that you do a co-write, Get an Excel spreadsheet or a Google Sheet or Apple Numbers or, you know, whatever the different data entry method that you use is. And then make a chart and write down the song title, the co-writer names, the splits, who those co-writers are published by, you know, the date that you wrote the song, the date of creation. That's a very critical one. Those types of pieces of information, and of course, contacts for co-writers. Those pieces of information will serve you for the rest of your life. So get them now while you can.
The AIMP Nashville Pubcast is hosted by yours truly, Tim Hunzi. Producer, Brandon Harrington. Mixing and editing by Casey Porter. And this has been a Dime Collective production.